How much conviction lies behind talk of a European embargo on Russian oil? Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Victoria Craig. Good morning. Germany's economy minister, Robert Habeck, has this morning downplayed earlier reports that some European Union countries are leaning toward a ban on Russian oil imports by the end of the year. His country has been reluctant to do so for fear it could trigger wider global economic consequences. Mr. Habeck's remarks come as EU energy ministers sit down today for talks about how to respond to Russia's demand that European gas payments be made in rubles. The BBC's Jessica Parker explains why there are so many complexities around implementing a ban on Russian energy supplies.
There's been some reluctance and division within the EU about the idea of a ban on Russian oil. Momentum is growing, but this wouldn't be an immediate embargo. Diplomatic sources suggest a phasing out could run until the end of the year, in part to avoid upsetting global oil prices too much, but also to allow the most dependent countries like Slovakia and Hungary more time. Meanwhile, today, EU energy ministers gather for urgent talks in Brussels, particularly to discuss gas stocks and the bloc's preparedness for a supply crisis following last week's decision by Russian energy giant Gazprom to cut off Poland and Bulgaria.
That's the BBC's Jessica Parker reporting there. Well, as EU energy ministers discuss and debate today in Brussels, India's Prime Minister Narendra Modi is sitting down for his own set of talks with Germany's Chancellor Olaf Scholz in Berlin. The war in Ukraine and India's neutrality about it will be the center of discussions, as the BBC's Nikhil Anamdar reports from Mumbai.
There has been growing pressure on India to more explicitly condemn Russia's invasion and not do things such as buying up discounted oil or creating a rupee-ruble trading mechanism that would undermine the Western sanctions. So far, of course, India has resisted that pressure. So on oil, for instance, it has said that Europe should focus on itself rather than on India, because even now, Europe is buying up more oil in one afternoon than India does in a month. So there's a clear difference of stance here, given that India also has had a historic partnership with the Soviet Union, with big dependencies also on imported Russian defense equipment and so on and so forth. The West is very keen to wean India off some of those dependencies. So we'll have to see what these talks yield as far as that's concerned.
And it's interesting to look at it from the other side, too, because to put some of the oil buying in context, India is one of the world's biggest oil importers, and imports of Russian crude have doubled since last year. But as you said, that still is just about 2% of its total supply. So do you have a sense of what we're likely to see, what kind of pressure we're likely to see from European policymakers, government officials during this trip this week?
So far, India's managed to sort of resist any of that pressure. Overall, you know, Ukraine is going to be just one of the issues of this visit. Trade might also be in focus, because this trip comes just in the back of the European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen's visit to Delhi recently. So beyond Ukraine, I would be watching out for any announcements on trade.
And there have been media reports these talks will set the stage for more cooperation on the free trade agreement between the EU and India, which have been ongoing for years.
This is a free trade agreement that's really been languishing for nearly the last decade. More recently, both EU and India have said that they're hoping to conclude the FTA by 2024, which will significantly give a boost to trade between the two sides. That currently stands at about $110 billion. India has also been negotiating a free trade agreement with the UK. It's recently concluded one with Australia, and also a major deal with the United Arab Emirates. So there is hope that, you know, those talks would kickstart very soon.
The BBC's Nikhil Anamdar for us in Mumbai. Thanks so much for breaking this down.
Thank you.
Checking the numbers now, the Stock 600 index is down about 1% at this hour after weak economic data out of China today. It's worth noting trading here is thinned, with London's FTSE 100 closed for a holiday. Oil benchmarks are down between 2.5% and 3%, though still above $100 a barrel after factory activity in China shrank for the second straight month, hitting the lowest level in more than 2 years. The global cannabis industry is said to be worth some $3 trillion, and though legal markets have opened in many countries, few, if any, have the same kind of association with it as Jamaica. But as the BBC's Rachel Wright discovered, traditional growers are being left out by a compromise between decriminalization and full legalization.
Bali Vaswamy is a successful entrepreneur and businessman with experience of the legal cannabis industry in Denver, Colorado, and has links to the Marley family. He was the first person to be given a license after ganja was decriminalized. Bali's sister Rade showed me where they were growing the ganja. There were two massive containers with smaller plants and two enormous tents with the bigger ones.
About 2 weeks away from harvesting.
A plant such as that, how much is that worth to you?
Probably about $200-$300. We have about 1,800 plants.
At the Orange Hill community, known as the Mecca of Jamaican ganja due to the quality of the herb, Kirk takes me to see fields his family have farmed for generations. They are all illegal.
Most people go illegal because they can't find so much money to be able to have their own land and all that. You know, most people plant on a government land and family land or somewhere hiding in the bush.
The 2015 laws created an industry that revolved around medical cannabis and licenses. Jamaica couldn't legalize ganja because it would have broken international laws. And as a developing country, it is dependent on the US and the International Monetary Fund for money. The Cannabis Licensing Authority grants licenses to sell ganja. Levon Flynn is the chairman of the board.
There's a big demand for cannabis-infused products, particularly in the European market. Skin creams, CBD drops. What we are doing now is we are working with the Ministry of Health to develop the policy and the legislation that will allow all licensed producers, including our small farmers, to develop these products.
What seems to have happened to the multi-billion dollar cannabis industry in Jamaica is that big business is using the brand of Bob Marley, reggae and Rastafari while simultaneously edging them out of the market.
That's the BBC's Rachel Wright reporting from across Jamaica there and in London. I'm Victoria Craig with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.